Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
Today, I get to launch part three of a four-week sermon series that we've been going through together at the beginning of the year called Living My Best Life, a 21-day challenge to purpose. And I would encourage you, if you missed the first two sermons in this series, you got to get online, YouTube, Facebook, all the places once again, and you got to catch up because this series functions as one big sermon, right? Like most series, it's like one-off sermons you can kind of pop in and pop out on. Not this series. No, you need all the sermons to kind of ingest the full truth that I think the story of Esther is trying to teach you. So get online and watch that. Now, speaking of all the sermons, next week will be the last week of the series, and our favorite teacher in residence will be flying in from Phoenix, Dr. Mark Moore, and he'll be putting an exclamation point on this series. So okay, you guys will be done with the 21-day challenge at this point. I told Mark, give them a kick in the pants, right? They're done with the challenge. They're ready to go. They've got their purpose statements refined and written. Give them a kick in the pants and tell them to go get it. And so he'll be here for that. And I'm just saying, if you miss any of the sermons in this series, do not miss that one. Oh, and speaking of the 21-day challenge, if you haven't started, you still can. It is not too late for you. No, just download the app. Underneath the Living My Best Life part or tile on the app, you can start the challenge 10 to 15 minutes a day. And I can promise you, if you stick with it for 21 days, at the end of it, you'll be living a better life. And that's because your best life is an on-purpose life. And this 21-day challenge will help you refine or maybe even discover your purpose. Now, that having been said, getting down to business today, I want to jump straight back into the story that we have been reading and studying over the last 2 weeks. The story of a young orphan Jewish girl become beauty queen named Esther. Now, if you remember, Esther is an unlikely story because in a society where there was no such thing as upward social mobility, you basically died in the social class and wealth bracket that you were born into. Somehow, Esther made it from poverty to power by winning a beauty competition and then marrying the most powerful man on the face of the planet, King Xerxes, making her the most powerful woman on the face of the planet, Queen Esther. Now, as she started to appreciate and enjoy some of the luxuries and riches that came with wearing a crown, there was this evil plot hatched behind her back by this very, very wicked man, the villain of our story named Haman, right? And I just feel like you have to say his name like that. It's just his name, Haman. What kind of name is that? Like, Haman. Sorry if you named your kid Haman, but he's a villain in the Bible. Haman, right? So you got Haman, right? And here's what you need to know about Haman. He's a powerful, powerful man. Second most powerful man in all the kingdom. Wealthy man. Very connected, close to King Xerxes. And like most powerful man, if I had to summarize his purpose statement up for you briefly, I think I could. His purpose statement is this: I'm for me. I'm for Haman. And he loved it when other people made that their purpose statement as well. I'm for Haman. He loved to walk through the streets and receive the honors of the king, honors of a rich man. People would bow before him because they knew his reputation. They'd kiss the ring. They'd tell him he looked good when he didn't look good. They'd laugh at his jokes when they were really, really crummy. You know, the kind of stuff we do for powerful people. And Haman just soaked it all in from everybody. Well, almost everybody, except for one man, a Jewish man named Mordecai. Now, you guys remember Mordecai? Mordecai was the cousin and caretaker of Esther. And for whatever reason, he was not a fan of Haman, and so he didn't show Haman the respect that Haman thought he deserved. And that enraged Haman. So Haman came up with this plan to kill Mordecai. And not just kill Mordecai, but to kill all Mordecai's friends, all of his family, all of his neighbors, all of his people, all the Jewish people spread out across the kingdom. Now, at this time, he did not know Esther was a Jew, and I'm not sure if that would have mattered to him or not, but he knew that in order to pull this off, he would have to go get Xerxes' help. You see, Xerxes' kingdom was 127 provinces big. It stretched from India to Ethiopia, and the Jews were dispersed throughout it. So he went to Haman, he told him his plan, and then he made Haman an offer that Haman could not, he made Xerxes an offer that Xerxes could not refuse. Do you remember what Haman offered him? It was like over 370 tons of silver. I mean, no wonder Xerxes didn't ask any questions. Xerxes didn't ask, why the Jews? Like, what about the women and children? Nope. He just signed, sealed, and delivered it, put the signet ring on it. And before you knew it, the decree went out to all the provinces that the Jews were to be annihilated, men, women, and children, on a day not too far in the future. Now, I have to imagine that when Mordecai found this out, he was distraught. He had to feel some level of responsibility because whether or not his actions were right or wrong, they were still his actions, and they were the first domino that caused this for his people. So in his distress and his despair, Haman started to wring his hands and rack his brain to try to figure out a solution to save his people. And he realized that there was nothing he could do to save his people. In fact, there was only one person in the kingdom who had the power and who had the influence to do anything to help the Jews. And that was Queen Esther, the beauty queen. So he sent a message to Esther. He begged her to have the courage to go before the king. And Esther responded back the same way any of us would. No. No way. She responded with self-preservation. She's like, this is a suicide mission, Mordecai. In fact, this is what she said to him. She said, all the king's servants and people know that if any man or woman goes to the king in the inner court without being summoned, there's but one law. All alike are to be put to death. I myself have not been called to come to the king in 30 days. In other words, not only could this plan end in my death, but it is very likely to end in my death because there's some sort of rift, relational rift, between the king and I. I don't want to die, Mordecai. Do you want me to die, Mordecai? And at this moment, most friends would back off, right? But Mordecai is not most friends. Because instead of backing off, he leans in. And the words that he says to Queen Esther next are some of the most challenging, epic, dangerous, timeless, heart-pounding, hair-raising, mission-driven, purpose-centric words one loved one has ever said to another. He says, yes, Queen Esther, you may die one way or the other. But who knows? Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for such a time as this. Perhaps all you've gained isn't simply for you to enjoy, but rather it's to be given for a higher purpose. So, what will Esther choose? Will she choose to save herself or save her people? Well, I tell you, because of what Esther chooses next, she emerges as a hero. Because of what Esther chooses next, she leaves a legacy that we are still celebrating 2,500 years later. And it is only because of what Esther chooses next. Because here's what she says to Mordecai. She sent the reply, go, go, and gather together all the Jews of Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will do the same. And then, though it is against the law, I will go in to see the king. And if I must die, I must die. Now, I want to leave those seven words on the screen for a second. If I must die, I must die. Because, ladies and gentlemen, that's the price tag of purpose. You. You are the price tag of purpose. And Esther comes to this realization in this moment. If I'm going to truly discover a purpose that is bigger than me, beyond me, then I have to give myself to something bigger than myself that isn't about myself. If I must die, then I must die. You know, the idea of celebrating purpose and doing a whole series on it, a 21-day challenge in which we spend all this time to really fine-tune our direction in life, our unique purpose, it's kind of exhilarating. It gets people excited. Maximizing your life, living life in your sweet spot, finding God's intention for you. That's an exciting idea in theory. But let me remind you that purpose has a cost. It is not cheap. Few things in life worth having are cheap. No, there's a twist to purpose. There's a catch to purpose. There's a fine print on the bottom of the purpose contract. And the fine print of purpose is you. You got to get over yourself. You have to acknowledge that I am a means to an end. I am a means and not the end. In fact, as we said last week, you have to be willing to put the me in the means to some greater end. And that's what Esther was willing to do. She said, I'm a means for an end such as this. I'll give my life, all my life, for such a cause and such a time as this. Now, is this not what Jesus was already instructing us to do 2,000 years ago? Is it not? He's so ahead of his time. 2,000 years ago, Jesus, in fact, had already rejected the question of purpose that so many of us still ask and focus on today. What is my purpose? I hear that all the time. What is my purpose? What is my purpose? Now, Jesus doesn't say that's necessarily a bad question. He just proposes to us that there is a far better question than that. Rather than what is my purpose, he suggests that we ask who. Who is my purpose? Because what is my purpose points purpose at me, but who is my purpose points purpose at you. It moves me from me to you. From me to something beyond me. He says it like this, Matthew 22, some of the most epic words he's ever said. We read these words in our church every month. Jesus said, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. It's the first and greatest commandment, love God. The second one's equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself, love neighbor. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commands. Now you tracking with Jesus here? He says life isn't about what, it's about who. And then he gives you the two who's. He says, love God, that's who 1A. Love others, that's who 1B, which means love me can be no higher than number 3. And it's only when you get your priorities in that order that you begin to experience purpose. But that is so hard. It pushes back against what's natural. It pushes back against the individualism and the consumerism of our culture. It pushes back against this hyper-focus on self-care and self-love. But the fact of the matter remains that if you really want to love your life, you got to get your priorities just like this. But most of us won't because I am about me, right? That's the natural drift. Me, me. I like me. I bet you like you too, right? So that's what I want, my purpose, to satisfy me, to fulfill me, to maximize my life. Me, 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 me. But the only way to get all that for me is to put the me in the means. That's the catch. Jesus says it like this once. Mark 8:34, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. Get over yourself. And take up your cross, which has become the very definition, the symbol of self-sacrifice, the symbol of making yourself a means to some greater end. Take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. You gotta give up your life. So, hey, I just wanna be honest with you. Okay. Purpose is great and all. But it has a cost. And the cost is you. The price tag of purpose is you. Which brings us to our $1 million question today. Is purpose worth that? Is it worth it? And we need to do a cost-benefit analysis here, right? Because that's a big price. Is the payoff worth the price tag? Is the return worth the investment? Is purpose worth it? Now, I personally believe it is, but I can't make that decision for you. You got to make that decision all on your own. And you've made big decisions before like this. You've made big purchases. So you know that the only way you give a lot, you pay a lot, is if you know you're going to get even more in return. And purpose is asking of you your life, which means it better deliver something bigger and better than life. So does it? Is that even possible? And if it is purpose worth it? Well, back to our story. Esther chapter 5, verse 1. Esther and the Jews of the capital city have fasted, and the day has come for her to put it all on the line and stand before the king. On the third day of the fast, Esther put on her royal robes, and she entered the inner court of the palace, just across from the king's hall. The king was there, sitting on his royal throne facing the entrance. And his eyes came up and he locked eyes with Esther. And when he saw Queen Esther standing there in the inner court, he paused. Time out. And I gotta ask you, can you imagine the suspense of this moment? Can you imagine the suspense? Like she's put it all on the line here. In the next 60 seconds, Esther may be dead. In fact, if Vegas was releasing odds on this one, then chances are they'd tell you that the safe bet is in the next 60 seconds, Esther will be dead. Can you imagine the suspense? She knows this. Butterflies in her stomach. Knees are weak. Sweaty palms, light head. If I was Esther standing there in that moment, I would be praying quietly yet fervently under my breath. God, show up. Show me mercy. Soften the heart of the king. Be faithful in this moment like you've never been faithful before. I mean, you better believe she was afraid. Come on. She's afraid. I mean, when you face the price tag of purpose, it can be a very, very scary thing. But she took the leap. And some of you won't. Some of you won't because you doubt that purpose is worth the price. You doubt purpose is worth the price of your reputation or the price of your progress or the price of your wealth or the price of your quality of life. You doubt it, but Esther did it. And so she went all in and she faced her fears. I mean, hear this now. Fear in life is inevitable. But choosing to live fearfully is a choice. Courage is an option, and it's always an option. And Esther chose courage. So there she stands in front of the entrance of the king's room. Her destiny lays in the next few seconds. The king looks up, and when he saw Queen Esther standing there in the inner court, he welcomed her. He welcomed her. He welcomed her. Yes, he welcomed her. And he held out the gold scepter to her. And so Esther approached and touched the end of the scepter. And the crowd goes wild. And Esther lives to fight another day. Right? But the battle is not yet won. Verse 3. It says, then the king asked her, what do you want, Queen Esther? What is your request? I will give it to you, even if it is half the kingdom. Apparently, he's in a good mood that day. And Esther replied, well, if it please the king, let the king and Haman, there he is again. And she didn't say it like that because that would have given it away. She said, let the king and Haman come today to a banquet I have prepared for the king. Now, let me lay this out for you. What Esther does next is she executes on a series of maneuvers that ultimately allows her to outmaneuver Haman, this witty, powerful, clever man and completely turn the tables on him. First, she invites him and the king to a banquet. And as they are getting drunk and fat on the wine and food, the king asks her the question again, "Esther, queen, what do you want? I'll give you half the kingdom." But Esther's patient because, see, apparently, perhaps she is not yet convinced that the king means what he offers. So she offers something else. Verse 7, it says, Esther replied, "Well, this is my request and deepest wish. If I have found favor with the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my request and do what I ask, please come with Haman tomorrow to another banquet. I will prepare for you. And then I will explain what this is all about." And so the king agrees gladly, and Haman agrees gladly, and Esther knows. She got them both right where she wants them. But Haman has no idea. In fact, the story goes on to tell us that Haman skips home that night. He gathers together his family and his friends, and he begins to brag. He brags about his power. He brags about his wealth. He brags about his royal relationships with the king and how Queen Esther's inviting him to like exclusive VIP parties. He even begins to brag about how he's going to take out Mordecai and all the Jews. In fact, the story tells us that that night, he builds a 75-foot pole in the air so that when the day comes, he might impale Mordecai on it for all to see. But little does Haman know that when the day comes, it will not be Mordecai impaled on the pole. Night falls. Time passes. Haman sleeps like a baby. But I imagine that Esther prays and she plans. And then the second banquet comes. Chapter 7, verse 2. It says, "On this second occasion, while they were drinking wine, the king again said to Esther, 'Tell me what you want, Queen Esther. What is your request? I'll give it to you, even if it is half the kingdom.'" And then she moved in. And Queen Esther replied, "If I have found favor with the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my request, I ask that my life and the lives of my people will be spared. For my people and I have been sold to those who would kill, slaughter, and annihilate us. And trust me, king, if we'd merely been sold as slaves, I could remain quiet, for that would be too trivial a matter to warrant disturbing the king, but it is far worse than that, king." "Well, who would do such a thing?" King Xerxes demanded. "Who would be so presumptuous as to touch you, my queen?" And Esther replied, "He's sitting right next to you." "Haman." And that's when she said it like that. I promise, like, it has, "Haman. Haman. It's this wicked Haman. He is our adversary. He is our enemy." And Haman grew pale with fright before the king and the queen. Now, the story goes on for about 3 more chapters. But allow me to summarize it all for you like this. Game, set, match, Esther. I mean, checkmate, Haman. Haman. It's really a happily ever after story after this. Seriously, like, Mordecai is vindicated. Haman is executed. The Jews are liberated. And both Esther and Mordecai are elevated as national heroes. In fact, there was a feast put into place in that time called Purim that 2,500 years later, the Jews still celebrate, in which they come together and they eat, they give gifts to the poor, and they remember the story of deliverance, the story of a young beauty queen who discovered her purpose and thought it worth the price. So, back to you. Is it worth it? Is it worth the price? Well, Esther thought it was. But again, Esther can't choose for you either. So let me shift the question just a little bit and ask it to you like this. What does it take to live a full life? Like a great life, like a life that's admirable. What's true of people who you look at and you're like, man, they live life to the fullest? What is the metric of a full life? Well, I'll tell you what it isn't. It isn't length. Length is inconsequential, right? It isn't length. No, the metric of a full life is this powerful thing called meaning. Those people who we look at and we're like, I want to be like them, or they really changed the world. There are people who lived lives of meaning and did meaningful things. It's meaning. Meaning's the metric. And that's why I think purpose is so powerful and important, because here's the deal. You can actually purchase meaning by paying the price of purpose. Is this not what Jesus proves? Whether you believe in Jesus as the Son of God or not today, I think most of us could agree that he was a great man. He stood for great things. He stood for them in great ways, and then he was willing to pay a great price for them. He died for what he believes. Jesus lived a full life. Many of us try to follow after his ways today. But let me tell you what Jesus didn't live. He didn't live a long life. Jesus died at the age of 33, just a little older than me. He only spent 3.5 years in the public spotlight. And yet we Christians look at Jesus and we think he's the definition of humanity. Like it is his character that we're trying to conform our lives to. We think that he lived for the ultimate purpose. And because of that, he purchased ultimate meaning for his life and for many, many other lives. Okay, let me point out something critical to you about Jesus' life. One thing that Jesus and Esther shared in common is that they were both willing to pay the price, become the suffering servant for God's will and God's people. But one thing that was different about them is that Jesus actually had to pay the price, right? Esther didn't, but Jesus did. In fact, when Jesus stood before the rulers of his day, they did not extend the scepter out to him. Rather, they beat him over the head with a stick. They slapped him, punched him in the face, mocked him, spit upon him, and yelled, "Crucify him, crucify him, crucify him," and crucify him they did. And I will tell you this, for some of you, your story may end like Esther, and I pray that for you. I pray happily ever after over you, but for others of you, it will not. You will be crucified, just like Jesus, probably not nailed to a wood pole like we live in this time, in this place. Thank God for that, but you will have to carry your cross. For some of you, you'll have to crucify your reputation to stand for a better cause. For some of you, you'll have to crucify your promotion or your place at work because you refuse to compromise your character. For some of you, you'll have to crucify your wealth and prosperity because you know that giving what you've gained is more important than hoarding it or simply enjoying it. For some of you, you'll have to crucify your comfort in order to serve others. For some of you, you'll have to crucify your quality of life because God's will and God's way calls you to another path. But I want you to know that in those moments when you are being crucified, when you are carrying your cross, when your life may be full of pain and suffering and God may seem to be absent, he is not absent. In fact, in those moments, you've never been closer to Jesus and you've never been closer to living a life of meaning. And that's good news. And you know what even better news is? Reward is coming for you. If you carry your cross, reward is coming. Vindication is coming. Resurrection is coming. Because see, you know what I love about Jesus' story? Doesn't end on Friday. On Friday, he's killed and he's thrown in a tomb, buried a loser. But on Sunday morning, yeah. A heart that had stopped beating began to beat again. Lungs filled with air, eyes open, arms and legs stretched out, and Jesus got up and he walked out. And in that resurrection moment, his resurrection cast a retrospective light backwards on the cross and gave it ultimate meaning. It cast a light backwards on his life and his teachings and gave it ultimate meaning. And then it sent a shockwave forward. 2,000 years later, on the other side of the world, where thousands gather together and still gain meaning from the price he paid. So I just want you to know that when you carry your cross, when you're sacrificing it all, you're in good company. And reward's coming for you. Vindication is coming. Resurrection is coming sooner or later. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Mark 8, finish the passage. Jesus says, if any of you wants to be my follower, you got to give up your own way and take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, I'm just going to tell you, you'll lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. You see, you know what the cross and the empty tomb proved to me? Proves to me that even if it doesn't pay in this life, purpose always pays in the next. So pay the price, pay the price, pay the price, because it's worth it. Okay, so let me illustrate this for you in a really, really practical and personal way. This Christmas, I made off really good, just being honest with you. I got 2 new pairs of shoes, wearing one of them right now, super swaggy, my opinion. I got 2 new shirts that I really love. I got peanut butter M&Ms in my stocking. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. I got a very, very practical gift, some cold hard cash and gift cards, which are always on the top of my Santa list. And check this out. My wife, Lindsay, bought me the biggest and most expensive Christmas present this year that I have ever received before. This December, Lindsay bought me a new house. Yeah, we got a new house. It's great. It's not far down the road from the church. We got gas logs in the TV room that work, unlike our last house. It's great. It's awesome. But despite this amazing, beautiful home and all that comes with it, that's not the best Christmas present I got this year. You know what the best Christmas present I got? I'll show you. I brought it with me, a little show and tell here. It's this scrap piece of paper that Lindsay tore out of her journal and wrote me a note on and then stuffed it in my stocking. Almost missed it because of the M&Ms. And this is what it says. Tyler, thank you for all you do for our family. I know this Christmas has been hectic. Sick kids, sick us, buying, selling a house, all the Christmas Eve services, love the Ville offering and raising the funds, traveling. It's just been crazy. And I've been a little snippy. Which, sidebar, snippy for Lindsay is like every day for me. If you can imagine the emotional composure between the two of us, it's just like, so her confession there makes me feel guilty. But so I've been a little snippy. But I want you to know I am so thankful for you and so very proud of you, even when I don't do a good job of showing it. I want you to know you're a great husband and daddy. There's no one I'd rather do life with and raise our crazy kiddos with. Palmer has the best role model there is. You're doing great at your job in the midst of all this too. You have literally affected millions this year. If you think about the butterfly effect of the people you've inspired in our church. There are people who have water, food, shelter, new life, freedom from oppression. Because of a movement God started through our church. And then more importantly, the kingdom impact it's made. I'm so, so proud of you. I'm lucky to be your wife. Sometimes I have to pinch myself to see if it's really true. I'm in love with you and the life we are building in our new house. Merry Christmas. I love you, baby. Lindsay. Now, I'm not always an emotional guy, at least not outwardly, but every time I've read that letter, and I've probably read it 20 times, it makes me feel something. It makes me feel proud. Makes me feel significant. Makes me feel important. Makes me feel like my life means something. And better than a brand new house with gas logs in the TV room is knowing that my life means something. I wouldn't trade that for 10 houses. And my wife, the woman who knows me better than anybody on the face of the planet, took the time to remind me that my life has, and it will, and it does mean something as long as I stay the course of purpose. You see, God's given me three targets, if you will, of purpose, three ministries in my life: the ministry of being a father, the ministry of being a husband, and the ministry of being a leader in a local church. And Lindsay reminded me that this imperfect dad really can shape the next generation by raising up our two kids. This imperfect husband really can impact her life by loving her well. And this young, in over his head leader really can impact his city eternally with the help of a great church. The note reminded me of all the sacrifices, you know, because we make lots of sacrifices. Life is hard. But when you live your life on purpose, you go all in. I pour 100% of my time and my energy and my money, all my efforts into those three targets. That's my life. I only get one life. It's my life. It's not a cheap price to pay. But I'll tell you this, if I got to go and relive my life over again, the only thing that I would change is that I would push all in on those three things earlier. Because it's worth it. It's worth it. Living my life on purpose has given me meaning, and my wife reminded me of that this Christmas. Now, I say all that to you not to say, look at me, the pastor setting the bar high. No. Because I look around this room right now, and I see leaders, I see fathers and mothers, I see husbands and wives who have accomplished far more than I ever will. And right on. Now, I say this because I know you feel the same thing that I do. You feel it. You feel this soul cry for meaning. I want to make a difference with my life. I want to change the world. I want to move the meter and leave the world a little better than I found it. Hey, you know what that is? That is your soul crying out for meaning. Or on the flip side, some of you are frustrated today. You know, there has to be something better. There has to be something bigger. There has to be more to life than this. You know what that is? That's your soul crying out with a hunger for meaning. And the good news is that there is more to life than this. There is meaning. And you can have it, but it comes at a cost. It is not cheap. But it's worth it. It's worth it. Man, is it ever worth it? And don't you want to live a life of meaning? Don't you want to live a life that gives meaning to others? 2,500 years later, on the other side of the world, we still celebrate Esther's story. And that's for one reason and one reason only. Because she thought it all worth the risk. In fact, she knew that the reward was in the risk. And I'll tell you this, the world does not need, nor does it remember, nor does it care about another person who chooses to play it safe or selfish. No, the world needs heroes of meaning that live life for something bigger, something higher than just me. So hear me now if you hear nothing else. People may envy the comfortable, but history remembers the meaningful. And people may follow the comfortable, But the world is changed by the meaningful. And you can be one of those meaningful ones. You can live a life of meaning. But I'm not trying to pull the wool over your eyes. I just want to tell you the last 10%. It costs. Few things in life worth having are cheap. So meaning costs. Purpose costs. But it's worth it. So I want to challenge you to pay the price today, because the reward is worth the risk. Heavenly Father, give us the boldness and the courage to face down the desires of today. Give us the boldness and the courage to face down the fears that keep us from pushing all in for you. And let us today pick up our cross and carry it. Give us just a taste of meaning. If that's all we get, just a taste of it. An experience of it. This side of heaven. So that we know what we're in it for. And if it ever becomes confusing or too much for us to bear, turn our eyes to the cross to remind us, to clarify for us exactly what it looks like to bear the cost of purpose. As always, we ask you, send the Holy Spirit to help, because this journey is impossible for us to do alone. Send us out to make a difference today. It is in Jesus' most powerful name we pray. Amen. Well, hey, thank you so much for being here today. I want to let you know that if you are a first-time guest, we would like to meet you. I would like to meet you. I'm going to try to make my way out to the guest relations kiosk and swing by there. We'd love to shake your hand and know your name. If you need prayer, or if you want to make any kind of decision or have any questions at all, you can walk outside those two doors right there, and the fireside room will be on your left. Pastors will be in there. Have a great, great week. Go live your life on purpose.